Live from the College of Communication, Arts, and Sciences at Michigan State University, it is now time to go beyond the X's and the O's with WKAR's Current Sports.
You want to go after an athlete, one of my athletes, come after me. I'm a man. I'm 40.
My style is impetuous. My defense is impregnable.
Well, I'm the best corner in the game. When you try me with a star receiver like Crabtree, that's the result you're going to get.
Yes, did I express to them I was mad? I was furious. Just furious.
I know my wife will at least shut fake one time.
We're talking about practice, not a game.
And I told our players, you need to be more like a dog. We don't need a bunch of cats in here. Looking in the mirror. Do I look good? I got my extra bands on. I got my other shoes on. Be a dog. We don't need no meows. We don't need no cat.
Here's your host, L. Martin.
What is up, beautiful people? Welcome to WKAR's Current Sports. That's right. It is Thursday, March 28th, 2019. And man, oh man, is it a beautiful day here in mid-Michigan. I mean, don't you just wish it could just stay like this the rest of the year? I mean, this is a perfect spring day. And take advantage of it, folks, because, again, it's Michigan. You never know. It could be snowing on Monday, all right? But enjoy this. You know, the sun is out, not a cloud in the sky. We're reaching like mid to high 50s today. So beautiful, in fact, that I just got up in a great mood, because whenever the sun is out and the weather is this nice, it just automatically, I don't care who you are, it lifts your spirits a bit, doesn't it? So normally I work out at night, as you guys know. I worked out this morning. You know, I was feeling up to it, woke up around like 8 a.m., hit the gym, got it in, and I'm riding that wave throughout the entire day. So I'm in a great mood. I hope you guys are. I hope if you are not working right now, right? If you are not on the grind, are not on the grizzy, you know, at the job working at 9 to 5 and you got the day off, you know, I hope you're out, you know, walking around and listening to the show, walking the dog, or just enjoying the outdoors right now as you listen to WKAR's Current Sports. Or maybe you're in the car, roll those windows down and just blast it, okay? Thank you so much for allowing us to be a part of your day. A lot to get to, folks. Today is the day. So, and I'm glad I got my workout in early as well, because I know that probably around like 6 o'clock, I'm going to be getting ready at my apartment, just TV on, windows open, getting ready for the Sweet 16. And I tell you what, they are just good matchups everywhere in this year's Sweet 16. You know, on one hand, you can complain and say, well, Al, there weren't that many upsets. You know, what happened to March Madness and the buzzer beaters and, you know, a low seed Cinderella story. But, you know, on the other hand, you look at it and say, well, when you really look at this year's tournament and you look at the matchups that we have, you got some big dogs going at it. And that is something that I really, 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 really enjoy. All right, so the madness ensues today. We'll touch on Michigan and Texas Tech. That should be a fun game later on today. Of course, Michigan State does not get back in action until tomorrow at 7:09 p.m. against LSU. So we'll briefly touch on Michigan State. And you know what? And many of you blew up my inbox, and you know, I got some calls from you guys because, you know, we've had some really in-depth topics on this week's Current Sports, so much so that we didn't get a chance to roll in the Tom Izzo weekly press conference earlier this week. So, you know, you ask and we giveth. You guys have been dying to hear a bit of what Izzo had to say. So I'll play a portion of the Tom Izzo press conference later on this hour. All right. But I'm going to touch on the Sweet 16, talk about today's matchups. Also, I definitely want to close the conversation that we had to close out yesterday's Current Sports. That was a fun one. Discussing the NFL pass interference modifications, the new challenges that coaches are allowed to do now. You can throw the flag, you know, for offensive and defensive pass interference. If you feel like you've been wronged, you can throw that challenge flag and
Look at the replay to see. All right, you heard my thoughts on it, but I want to elaborate a little more on it. We spent about, you know, about 5 to 7 minutes on it yesterday. And then it is also a big day in the world of baseball, seeing as though today is opening day for a lot of teams out there. The regular season officially gets underway in Major League Baseball. And I want to bring you guys an interesting NPR piece done by Tom Goldman. It has a little twist on opening day in a conversation that isn't new. I thought Tom did a really good job at picking through the layers of this story when it comes to baseball's popularity or lack thereof with today's youth. All right, so we'll get to that. And then on the back end of the show, we'll hopefully get to Throwback Thursday. All right, if you would like to be a part of the hour, as you know, multiple ways in which you can do so, 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. You can also watch the live stream at facebook.com/WKAR News, and you can tweet the show at WKAR News or tweet me directly at Al Martin, WKAR. Here are your quick hit headliners. Okay, and we start with the Detroit Tigers because Tigers fans, the wait is finally over. Your Detroit Tigers regular season officially beginning today. They kick it off traveling to Toronto to start a 4-game series. First pitch expected around 3:37 p.m. The expected starting pitching duel should be between Jordan Zimmermann and Marcus Stroman. The Tigers were an even 15-15 in spring training with Miguel Cabrera launching 5 home runs and 15 RBIs and also Kristen Stewart notching 3 homers and 13 RBIs. You can catch the action for the first game of the Detroit Tigers regular season on Fox Sports Detroit.
Thanks, big fella.
Yeah. Oh, man, that's a great...
Thanks, big fella.
That's a great drop. Shout out to Jack Kerwin behind the glass, Rod Allen, who's no longer with. Where's Rod at? Do we know where Rod Allen went?
I don't think Rod is anywhere right now. Mario's doing radio for the Red Sox. He's in a rotation. I can look it up, though. I don't believe Rod is anywhere right now.
Okay, Rod didn't get picked up yet. I think Rod is really good at his job as well, but Mario Mbemba and Rod got into an alleged scuffle after a Detroit Tigers and Chicago White Sox game. As you guys know, that was well documented, right? And, yeah, I guess, you know, if you look at Dave Dombrowski, Dave Dombrowski just picking from the Tigers tree yet again and hiring Mario Mbemba. He's on the radio there, right?
Yeah, he's part of the rotation, so he's doing like 60 games or something this year. They got a couple play-by-play guys doing radio.
Gotcha. So he's doing radio, not TV. He's not on television.
Correct. Rod Allen is nowhere right now.
Gotcha. He's nowhere. All right. I'm rooting for you, Rod. I'm rooting for you, brother. Just keep the temper in check, okay? And there are many, many times where I want to just launch across the glass and just go at it with Jack and Alec. I love you guys, though.
Oh, no.
You know? No, I love you guys. I'm joking. But, you know, you got to keep it professional, all right? All right, Detroit Red Wings in action tonight. The Wings hit the road to take on the Buffalo Sabres tonight at 7 p.m. The Wings, who have won 4 of their last 5, are making their odds of hitting Jack Hughes lottery as hard as possible. So, yeah, the Red Wings have been mathematically out of the playoffs for a little bit now. So if you're watching this game tonight, you are much more dedicated than the majority. Not just me, the majority of Detroit Red Wings fans out there, right? Both teams fighting for the lottery pick, and Tampa Bay almost has as many points as both of these teams combined Detroit has 66 points, and Buffalo has 71. Tampa Bay has a staggering 122 points. That action can also be seen on Fox Sports Detroit later on tonight.
I'm the biggest Wings fan as anyone, but if you're watching Red Wings hockey tonight over March Madness,
you need to reevaluate
your priorities.
You need to go see a doctor. There's something wrong with you. Yeah, without a doubt, man. I mean, I would be curious to see what the ratings are for tonight's Red Wings game. They shouldn't be anywhere on par with tonight's Detroit Pistons game. I may be flipping back and forth, not going to lie, because the Pistons right now are in this really intriguing playoff hunt, and they got to win tonight. They will play host to the Orlando Magic tonight at 7 p.m., and the Pistons right now are barely hanging on in the playoff race. Again, they're in contention with the Brooklyn Nets as well as the Miami Heat for a possible spot, so this is big for the Pistons. We'll see what happens. Also, Tim Hardaway, one of my favorite players from back in the 90s. He was a part of one of the original, big threes, and the other two are in the Basketball Hall of Fame. He thinks he knows why he hasn't joined them in the Hall of Fame. His well-publicized rant from more than a decade ago, in which he said, I kid you not, he hated gay people. Yeah, he teamed with Mitch Richmond and Chris Mullin to form Run TMC in Golden State and led the Warriors back to relevance with an exciting form of basketball. Mullin and Richmond are both in the hall. This is what Hardaway had to tell Dan Le Batard on Miami radio back in 2007. Quote, you know, I hate gay people, so I let it be known. I don't like gay people, and I don't like to be around gay people. I am homophobic. I don't like it. It shouldn't be in the world or in the United States. Again, that was a direct quote from Tim Hardaway back in 07 on the Dan Le Batard show, and he believes those comments are the reason why he's not in the Basketball Hall of Fame. So, yeah, there you have that. Tim Hardaway has since, I think it's important to note this, he has come out, you know, you can take it for whatever it's worth, he has come out and apologized for those comments, and he says he's a changed man now and does not believe those comments anymore. So, yeah. Okay. Much lighter story. The Michigan State baseball team rallied from an early 2-0 deficit to beat Western Michigan 3-2 yesterday in the Spartans' 2019 home opener at McLean Baseball Stadium at Cobbs Field. MSU scored on a suicide squeeze sacrifice bunt and a pair of sack flies and got solid bullpen pitching, ringing up 7 Ks over 7.2 innings pitched. Senior left-handed reliever Evan Floor, he earned his first career win as a Spartan, while fellow reliever, right-handed junior, Indigo Diaz, collected his first career save. So, again, Michigan State rallying down early to top the Broncos. Okay, tonight, March Madness. Again, we'll be diving more into today's games in just a moment, but this is what that slate looks like today. 4 games today, starting at 7:09 p.m. to be exact, all right? You got Florida State, 4 seed, taking on 1 seed Gonzaga. Cannot wait for that one. Then at 7:29 p.m., so you're going to have to work the clicker a little bit, number 3 Purdue taking on number 2 Tennessee. And then later on in the night, you got number 3 Texas Tech taking on 2 seed Michigan at 9:39 p.m. And then later on to close out the night, the late game at 9:57 p.m. will be 12 seed Oregon against 1 seed Virginia. More on those games in a moment.
Get the lingerie off the deck.
Woo!
Explosive.
I love it. All right, Tyler Trent. He first met Purdue football coach Jeff Brohm and others outside the student entrance at Ross Ade Stadium. Everyone who walks by or passes through the entrance will now know Trent's story. Purdue yesterday renamed Gate E at the stadium as Gate T2, the Tyler Trent Student Gate, in honor of the student and Boilermakers fan who inspired so many during his fight against cancer. Trent sadly passed away on New Year's Day, January 1st, at the age of just 20 years old, from a type of bone cancer, along with the new steel archway above Gate T2, which will be built before the 2019 campaign gets underway, will be a plaque with Trent's image that reads, quote, "Forever our captain," and explains Trent's story and his contributions to the university. That's the story of the day there, folks. Yeah, that's absolutely awesome. All right, and to close out the Quick Hit Headliners, this story, I can't help just but chuckle whenever I read this story. But lawyer and extortionist Michael Avenatti, he continued his online barrage against Nike yesterday, the same company that he's been accused of trying to shake down more than $20 million from, in a tweet that marks the latest twist in a wild 24 hours in basketball recruiting. Avenatti documented what he alleges is a $10,000 payment from Nike to Andrea Ayton, the mother of Phoenix Suns rookie DeAndre Ayton. Using text messages, emails, and bank records, Avenatti laid out the logistics of an alleged payment that he infers would be both illegal and in violation of NCAA rules. Avenatti, he sent out a tweet with the quote, hashtag, receipts, hashtag, and says the documents are, quote, in the hands of prosecutors. He said on Twitter, quote, Nike had cash in hand and delivered to avoid discovery by law enforcement and by the NCAA. Oh, boy, interesting stuff there, folks. I'm just really glad that the whole FBI investigation and this story and others aren't really moving to the forefront of March Madness right now, even though, I mean, Michigan State takes on LSU, and we all know what happened with head coach Wade, right? So I'm just glad that's not becoming the centerpiece of every March Madness broadcast and on the tongues of many who are watching the tournament this year. It will, though. It will after the tournament. It certainly will. This story and others are not going to die. I tell you that. Nor should they die. I think there's a bigger conversation that we need to have concerning college athletics, not just in the world of college hoops, but across the board. All right. So that does it for your Quick Hit Headliners. 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. If you would like to join our airwaves and let your voice be heard, you can also do that by commenting at our live stream at facebook.com/WKAR News, and you can tweet me directly at Al Martin WKAR, or tweet the show at WKAR News. Okay, folks, I just want to give final thoughts right now on a conversation that we had on Wednesday's WKAR's Current Sports. You know, we closed out the hour by touching on the NFL's new pass interference replay. It's interesting, isn't it? I mean, you know, this topic really shot to the top of discussions in football after, of course, the NFC Championship game. We all know what happened. I don't need to rehash that, but it was blatantly missed. A pass interference was blatantly missed by the referees in that game. You know, who knows it? You know, I look at that game and I say to myself, okay, because I'm never one. I will never be that guy to blame a win or a loss due to how the officials officiated, okay? But there are some calls that are just so in your face, they're hard to ignore. They really are, and that was one of them. And, you know, there's a lot of mixed reaction to the new pass interference rule in the NFL that states that you can now challenge whether or not you believe pass interference has happened on a given play, whether that be on the offense or the defense. And one, I'll say this, you know, if replays there, use it. You know, we're in 2019 now. You know, we're not living in the Stone Ages. And if you have the ability to go back and look at a call or look at a play that you believe the referees missed, why not? Go back, look at it, get it right. I've always believed that you should get it right and keep it moving and instead of, you know, in real time, if you blow a call, not having the ability to go back and correct it, it's a crime. It really is because, again, it can affect outcomes. It can affect outcomes. But, again, I'm not going to be that guy to sit there and say, well, that one call is what transformed the game. And come on now, 2 hours of sports, 2+ hours of sports, and you're telling me that one call is what really, you know, kept you out of the Super Bowl. I mean, heck, especially when it comes to the Saints and that NFC Championship game, you know, you had two opportunities early on to put more than 6 points on the board to get more than two field goals. But I hear you. I've always adhered that if you have the ability, you have the technology to go back and look at a call and get it right, do it. No problem with that. And it looks as though right now, I don't know if a lot of people know this, but the 2018 CFL season actually allowed replay review for pass interference. And, you know, I'm reading from, this is coming from Pro Football Talk at NBC Sports. And, you know, they have an article written by Darren Gant that profiles how the CFL pass interference replay has not been a problem. During the 2018 CFL season, 86 games, including the playoffs, there were 71 coaches' challenges. And 45 of those were for defensive pass interference. Of that sum, 22 of the challenges were successful. 21 for adding the penalty and 1 for removing a flag thrown on the field. There were just 6 challenges for offensive pass interference. That's shocking, right? And 2 were successful, both for adding the foul after the play occurred. So over the past 5 years, 41% of all pass interference challenges have been successful. So, you know, the data's there when it comes to the CFL, and this has worked out relatively well, because I think this is the big problem that I voiced yesterday. This is the only concern I have with this. And again, maybe it's trumped by this data coming from the CFL. We'll only know how this will affect the flow and how this will affect the game when it's in effect come the 2019-2020 season in the National Football League. But the only concern that I have is whether or not it will disrupt the flow. And whether or not, you know, Jack, do you remember when we had the whole catch rule phenomenon in the NFL, right? What is a catch? What isn't a catch? You remember the Calvin Johnson and Chicago Bears game? And, you know, a lot of people thought that was a catch, like me, while other people are saying, well, you got to complete the process. It just got really confusing. And I just fear, it's the only fear that I have concerning this rule. I just fear that when looking back at replay, because football is such a physical sport, right? I mean, heck, I think you could realistically make the argument that there is some kind of holding or interference call on just about 90% of plays in football, because it's just a physical sport. If you're looking hard enough, I think you can find something out there. I'm just wondering, when you go back, if let's say a play happens, right, and you got a coach that throws that flag, and he's like, look, ref, you need to look at that one again. it's going to be hard for me as a viewer to, because this is what we're going to do, right? You know, we're going to pick apart that play. We're going to pick apart the physicality of that play. Slow down, right? Not in real time, but slow down and look. Oh, man, well, he's got that one hand on him. And is he yanking on the jersey there? Well, what about the bump early in the play? Was that past 5 yards? Well, I think there is potential for a lot of confusion when it comes to these challenges. That's the only thing I'm worried about. Because, again, I'm all for using technology to get it right. But when it comes to the inherent physical nature that is any given play in football, I think there's a lot of gray area there. I don't know.
Okay, so where are you at with the rule as a whole? Are you in favor of it?
I'm in favor. Okay, I'm in favor of it because you can't have – that was a crime, what happened to the Saints. That was a play that you got to get right. And I think if you miss a call like that as an NFL ref in the NFL playoffs, you should – it should be a really harsh punishment. I mean, that entire they shouldn't ref another game in the NFL, period. I mean, it's ridiculous. So for me, I'm all for the rule. I just think it needs to be more clearly defined as to what a pass interference is.
Well, I think it's fairly objective already, just because, I mean, when you look at, you know, contact on a passing play, obviously a player can look and lean, right? So if he's playing the ball and incidental contact happens, then that's not pass interference. So, I mean, with a lot of these replays, I think it'll come down to, you know, is this a case of looking and leaning, a guy trying to play the ball and incidental contact occurs, or is a guy facing the receiver and impairing his ability to make the catch? So, I mean, from that standpoint, I think pass interference is a lot more objective than like a holding call is, just because, you know, kind of the, I don't want to say the rule. I mean, yeah, kind of the rule is there in that, you know, some contact is permissible as long as you're trying to play the ball. So no, for me, I'm really on board with this, and I don't know. I mean, I think like anything at first, there will probably be some confusion, but looking back on it, I don't think anyone's going to feel bad about this rule change. I think this will benefit the NFL for sure.
You like this.
Yeah, big time.
I'll ask this then as well, because this is another thought I had when this got approved by the owners. 31-1, by the way. I mean, this was an overwhelming vote in favor of implementing this new challenge system when it comes to pass interference in the National Football League. I'm wondering about momentum as well. You know, how much would this disrupt the flow of the game? Now, I know you get two challenges, right? And if you nail those two challenges, then you also get a third possibility. I'm just wondering, at the end of the day, certainly coaches are going to be selective on when to use those challenges. Because I think in the last 2 minutes, it comes from the
replay. From upstairs, yeah, just like anything else.
Exactly. So I'm just wondering, though, how often we're going to see that flag thrown. And at the end of the day, again, the confusion of what's a pass interference and what's not. If you got two guys banging, you know what I mean? And two guys are equally on both sides, offense and defense. Two guys.
That's a drop.
Physical.
That's going to be a drop.
If you got two guys being physical, going for the football in the air, it can go both ways. And you can make the argument both ways, right? So what does a referee do when it comes to that? You know, I just think there's a lot of gray area when it comes to it.
No, I think that's fair. But I mean, when you talk about affecting momentum and affecting the rhythm of the game, will it affect the rhythm of the game any more than when they made the decision a couple years ago to review all turnover plays? Mm-hmm. You know, we've seen more replay reviews from that standpoint. And yeah, I would be, I guess, in the camp that, you know, we do spend a lot of time in an NFL game, you know, reviewing plays, maybe a little bit more than we'd like. But at the same time, I mean, I'd rather get the call right and have to spend a little bit more time analyzing replays than not. So, for me, I hear what you're saying about that, but I don't think reviewing pass interference is going to slow the game down much more than, you know, reviewing turnovers does. You know, pile up middle of the field, does the knee go down before the ball comes out? You know, kind of a similar concept.
Definitely. No, I hear you. I want to hear what the public thinks about this rule. 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. Should these be implemented in college football as well then? I mean, if you're going to do it in the NFL, why not, you know, trickle it down to the college game as well? What do you think?
That would be a little bit tough just because everything's already reviewed in college. So, I mean, obviously college coaches have a challenge flag. So maybe if you make the rule that you have to use the challenge flag on pass interference as opposed to, you know, the booth looking at everything, because that would be heinous at that point. And the other thing
college
with
football.
Yeah, the other thing with college football is that in college it's only a 15-yard penalty. It's not a spot foul.
Right,
so,
right,
you know, it
right.
doesn't hold the same leverage necessarily. So no, I don't think you have to review every pass interference call in college.
That's the thing as well in the NFL, because it's a spot foul.
That's why, I mean, it's got to be reviewable to me.
Because you can totally, you know, shift the field based on one play. Can you just imagine quarterbacks just lining up in a Hail Mary, just throwing it up there? Oh, throwing a challenge flag now and see if there's a pass interference. I think that's a strategy that some coaches are going to use come next season.
No, you're not wrong, because especially on Hail Marys, how often does pass interference occur?
Oh, my goodness.
There's so much contact down on the goal line.
Contact.
You're not wrong. So
I think you're going to see a lot of coaches really practicing this in the offseason, saying, let's practice the Hail Mary. We know there's going to be contact. Just whoever the quarterback is, just line up and just dart it down there. I'll have the red flag in handy. Okay? But under 2 minutes, it's got to come from the booth as well. So I'm sure that challenge will come from the booth. All right? Let's hit our – and also, do we know which owner voted against this?
Cincinnati Bengals.
Really? Okay, so that's come out now.
Yeah.
Hi. I wonder what his reasoning is.
I don't know.
That's intriguing. Okay, 31-1 vote. The Cincinnati Bengals owner was the only owner that was not for this. All right, let's hit our first break. When we come back, I'll have an interesting NPR piece to bring to you all, produced by Tom Goldman, centered on opening day and America's favorite pastime being back, and how many just wishes the game would hurry up. I'll explain. We'll be right back. Okay, welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. Get in some comments on our Facebook page at facebook.com/WKAR News. Ben says, I think pass interference should be reviewable in the NFL. That should be a no-brainer. And I hear you. I think that it's, again, it can sway momentum. We've seen some really blatant missed calls in the NFL. Now, I'm not even just talking about the NFC Championship game. And at the end of the day, you want to get it right. You want to get it right. So I'm for it. I'm just wondering if there's going to be a lot of confusion come next season. We'll see, though. Again, the CFL has tested it out, and it's worked fine. It's worked fine for them. It hasn't really slowed the game down. They also have a part in the piece where it kind of breaks down how pass interference and this new challenge hasn't really, you know, added on any time to a game. Actually, in 2017, here's a stat for you. CFL games averaged 2 hours and 50 minutes. Last season, games averaged 2 hours and 50 minutes. And I think that's like the average time of an NFL game, right? I mean, almost 3 hours, right?
Minus halftime and commercials. A game will run from 1 until 4:15, I'd say.
Exactly. Right. So I'm talking about with commercials.
Yeah, and halftime. I mean,
right.
That's probably right. Yeah.
Yeah, about 3 hours. You know,
probably a little under that, actually. Yeah, probably.
A little longer than that. Yeah.
No, I'd say a little beneath it, minus commercials and halftime. I'd say it takes less than 3 hours.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I'm guessing when it comes to this 2 hour and 50 average for a CFL game, I'm guessing that's without commercials. They're not taking into account, you know, commercials and viewing and that kind of thing. I'm talking strictly game time here. So there you have that. Again, your thoughts on it, 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. Also want to hear your thoughts on Tonight's lineup for the Sweet 16, some fun games, some fun games. These next 2 days are going to be absolutely awesome. You know, I gave you the slate for tonight: Florida State, Gonzaga, Purdue, Tennessee, Texas Tech, Michigan, Oregon, and Virginia. And you know, I don't know who put this this piece of paper on the current sports desk here before I took the air. But you know, and this is a discussion that I had earlier this week. I think if I had to guess, it's either Scott Pohl or Kevin Lavery. Thank you guys, whoever did it, because this piece of paper actually. That those who are watching Facebook.com/WKAR News can see. I'm holding up right now. It shows the average ticket prices for the Sweet 16, which are a bit mind-boggling. Not even going to hold you up. You know, if you are a fan of whatever team or just a fan of college basketball and you want to attend a game in the sweetness of 16, you are going to be breaking the bank, especially if you're trying to see a game in the East region. But just to go through it, the average ticket prices out in the Midwest, $138. The average ticket prices in the South, $177. The average ticket price in the West region of the tournament, $180. And then check this. The average ticket price to attend the Sweet 16 in the NCAA Tourney's East region is $650. Are you kidding me? This further elaborates on the conversation that we had to begin yesterday's current sports. And boy, that was a fiery segment, right? If you missed it, go to WKAR.org. But discussing, you know, the foundation of that discussion was on these incentives, the money incentives that respective conferences in college basketball and the teams within those conferences have if they win games in advance in the tournament. The money is mind-boggling. The TV contracts with CBS and Turner Sports, mind-boggling. You know, starting, you know, very, very soon for the next 8 years, you know, we're talking $8.8 billion in revenue in the world of college hoops. And then, you look at these ticket prices. And if I had to guess, a lot of the reason, Jack, why you look out in the East, you have a price tag of $650, if I had to guess, a lot of that has to do with the fact that we are seeing, and you'll get the chance to see, who I believe to be a once-in-a-generation type of talent in basketball, and Zion Williamson and the Duke Blue Devils. I'm pretty sure Zion has a little bit to do with this $650 price tag.
Am wow, hot take there. Coming in hot with that one, Al.
Coming in hot, right? Real hot. That's steaming. No, it's really cold. That's pretty obvious, right?
No question.
Obvious.
No question. I mean, he's got to be the best player to play college ball since Anthony Davis, at least, right?
In my lifetime, he's the best college basketball player I've ever seen, to be honest with you.
Better than Melo?
Better than Melo. Better than Melo. Leitner as well, even though Leitner was really, really good. Yeah, have you seen I Hate Christian Leitner?
No.
Oh, boy.
No, I mean
him.
To. I mean,
really good.
The best player I can think of.
Bill Walton is notoriously known as probably the greatest of all time in college hoops. That's what a lot of people believe. I think Zion's better.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to compare guys when you look at, you know, pro potential versus how good they were as a college player. Just because, to me, I think the most dominant I can remember would probably be Tyler Hansbrough going 4-0 against Duke. You know, how great he was at North Carolina. But, I mean, as a pro prospect, as an athlete, he's nothing compared to Zion Williamson. So,
yeah, right.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to compare from that aspect. But no, I mean, yeah, he's got to be the most athletic basketball player I've probably ever seen. Maybe LeBron. Well, I shouldn't say maybe LeBron. Him and LeBron. So,
yeah.
I mean, he's right up there with LeBron
just
James.
Imagine if LeBron played college basketball. But, yeah, I still think Zion is more athletic than LeBron James. But $650.
Did you ever hear the story about LeBron potentially going to play college hoops at Akron?
No, I didn't hear that.
So, his high school coach at St. Vincent St. Mary's, the year after he left, got hired to coach at University of Akron, and he took all of his players from that high school team because LeBron wasn't the only great player on that team.
Oh, they had a great
and,
I don't know if you've been watching the ESPN like behind the scenes kind of deal they've been doing with him and his teammates, which is awesome. But yeah, you're right.
Yeah, no. So he recruited hard to get LeBron to go to Akron, and a lot of people think that if LeBron actually would have gone to school, would have played for a year, it would have been at Akron to try to win a national championship with his high school teammates.
That would have been something.
That would have been awesome, right?
That, especially a school like Akron, which isn't a blue blood in college basketball, to see a school like that. Oh my goodness, that would have been really. That's I did not know that.
That would have been that would have been awesome, right?
Yeah, really awesome. So yeah, but yeah, these ticket. I just wanted to pass along the information for you guys who are thinking about attending a Sweet 16 game. Well, they start tonight, so you're a little bit late if you're thinking about it now or tomorrow if you're trying to go to a game tomorrow. But yeah, crazy stuff. That's a ridiculous price tag. Okay, for you baseball fans, I want to bring this story to you guys because, you know, again, I just keep it real with you all. I mean, it's great opening day in the world of Major League Baseball, but we have addressed the elephant in the room when it comes to Major League Baseball here on Current Sports for a long time. We've been talking about this for a long time, and we've been tackling how the popularity of the game when it comes to the youth. I wonder what the average age of the Major League Baseball fan is. If I had to guess, it's north of 40. Without a doubt, it's north of 40. You just don't, I don't know, Jack. I mean, when you're talking with your homies about sports, how often do you guys talk about Major League Baseball? I never talk about it with my guys.
A lot more when the Tigers are good.
When the Tigers are
right
good.
Now, it's hard. Like baseball's such a regional sport. I can't tune in to watch, you know, I mean, outside the Yankees and the Cubs, because those teams are exciting, you know, I can't tune in to watch the Diamondbacks play the Cardinals on, like, a Tuesday night.
Yeah, like game 45 Tuesday night.
No.
You're not sitting there watching the entire game, right? And even if, when the Tigers are good, I'm not sitting there on my couch for 3+ hours. Watching a Detroit Tigers game.
Well, you got to find something else to do during that time too. Then you have, then you have the game on in the background. That's where baseball's great.
It's got to be background music. You know what I mean? It's got to be like a soundtrack playing, you know, at the house while you're doing something, you know, doing chores or something like that. But unless you're a diehard baseball fan, you're not sitting there glued to your television, especially the young sports fan base here in America. Just attention spans are very, 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 very short. So I want to bring you a piece by NPR's Tom Goldman, who again addresses baseball being back, opening day in Major League Baseball, and how many out there would wish the game would just hurry up. Here we go.
It was one of those classic spring training days earlier this month where you go, "Oh yeah, life is good."
Now batting number 89, Kyle Garland.
Dodgers and Giants fans at Scottsdale Stadium lounged under a hot Arizona sun. There's a lot of lounging during spring training. Families were out past the center field wall on a grassy slope. Standing nearby, longtime San Francisco fan Ryan Coven sipped a beer and gazed toward home plate.
You're supposed to forget time at a baseball game. You're supposed to relax and forget time.
Which is why he and his friend Amin Garwal were agitated, something that doesn't happen often at spring training. They were watching a large clock near home plate tick down from 20 seconds every time the pitcher got the ball from the catcher.
It's very distracting. I'm looking at the pitcher. I see it ticking down. 10, 9, 8. This is not, it's a very unbaseball experience.
On this day, it was early in the pitch clock experiment. It's been used in the minors for a few years to make pitchers and batters work faster, but not in the majors. And there was grumbling from the stands to clubhouses. Kyle Ryan pitches for the Chicago Cubs.
I think this is a big game changer. It's America's sport. Kind of stinks seeing it change, but it is what it is.
Actually, it isn't. The Players Union shared Ryan's distaste for the pitch clock, and MLB ended the spring training experiment, agreeing not to implement it, at least for a couple of years. But baseball officials still are committed to the idea behind the clock, speeding up the game, specifically eliminating dead time. They want crisp play for all fans, especially those device-toting young ones who want action and want it now. Back in the Scottsdale Stadium, 32-year-old Amin Garwal laughed at that stereotype.
I still think I'm young, and I enjoyed the game the way it was without a pitch clock.
He doesn't mind a three-hour game, last year's average for nine innings. Garwal says if baseball wants to appeal more to younger fans, do like the NBA, make videos and clips of action more available, and let the players have fun.
When a player does a bat flip and people freak out and traditionalists freak out, you know, like, it's 2019. They're pro athletes, it's entertainment, let them entertain.
Let's go, Cubs!
At the Cubs ballpark in Mesa, Arizona, lifelong Chicago fan Bob Weinberg had a different and perhaps surprising take on speedy baseball. He's 61 and retired, a time of life when who cares how long a baseball game takes? Weinberg does.
I've been to thousands of games, never heard a little kid say to his dad, gee, Daddy, I hope we see eight pitching changes today. That's always so exciting to see that manager walk out of the dugout and wave his arm to the bullpen. That's my favorite part of the game.
Weinberg is glad officials are tweaking the rules, even though the pitch clock's gone away. This season, the number of mound visits he's joking about, kind of, they'll be reduced. Also, breaks between innings will be shortened. Although Weinberg and the two 30-somethings in Scottsdale seem to defy generational stereotypes, some fit. 64-year-old Ned Yost is a baseball lifer. Now he's the Kansas City Royals manager. At a spring training gathering, he answered a few questions about pace of play, before finally he got fed up.
I don't know, man. You want to speed it up? Make it a seven-inning game. That'll speed it up.
Maybe a little too much, but such is the debate as baseball strolls a little more briskly into 2019. Tom Goldman, NPR News, Phoenix.
An interesting conversation that, again, baseball has been having for a few years now. Again, thanks to NPR's Tom Goldman for that piece. I want to know what you think. Do you think that baseball needs to continue to make a few tweaks here and there to speed up the game? Do you like a clock, kind of like a shot clock in you know, football, a play clock in football, a shot clock in basketball, that begins ticking as soon as a pitch is thrown so that you're not waiting forever and a day before that next pitch comes? Or do you think that's just way too distracting? I want to hear from our listeners out there, specifically our baseball fans out there who tune into current sports on a regular basis. 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. Let's hit our final break. When we come back, as promised, we'll have a bit of what Tom Izzo had to say during his weekly press conference. That and more, you are listening to the Thursday edition of WKAR's Current Sports. Folks, you hear the tune. It gives me goosebumps every time I hear it. It's nothing like that music around this time of the year. The sweetness of 16 officially gets underway today. Four-game slate today and tomorrow. Florida State, Gonzaga, Purdue, Tennessee, Texas Tech, Michigan, Oregon, Virginia. Do you think Michigan pulls out the matchup between Texas Tech tonight, Jack? I got Michigan winning.
The final score will be 17-15. You know what? It's tough because looking at the stats, Michigan is currently 1-4 against teams ranked in the top 10 in KenPom for defense, and Texas Tech's number one. Now, granted, three of those losses are to state, but so it's a little bit of a misleading stat. But, you know, Texas Tech struggles offensively even more than Michigan does, so it's going to be a grinded-out game a lot like the Florida game was, and
it's going to be ugly. I know.
Yeah.
These are two really good defensive teams. Two of the top teams in the nation.
No, I'm going to say Texas Tech pulls it out. We'll say by two or three. I think Michigan's favored by 3 points, I believe it is.
1.5 now.
One and a half.
It's close, man.
This
is 50-50.
Yeah, I think Texas Tech will pull it out.
Okay, I'm going Michigan. It's going to be really close, though, and a very, very ugly game. All right. And again, that game will tip off 9:39 p.m. on CBS. Okay, as promised, I want to get to the Tom Izzo press conference. We have, you know, we just haven't had time to roll it in this week. But you guys love hearing what Izzo had to say, a bit of what he had to say during his weekly press conference as Michigan State prepares to play LSU tomorrow night, 7:09 p.m. to be exact, out in Washington, D.C. Here is Coach Izzo.
I think there's some truth to that, you know, and some of it goes by what you did. In other words, Denzel Valentine had one goal in 16, win a national championship, because, you know, we thought we had a good enough team in 15, and to get there, we did. We had a lot of people back. I don't blame them for that. I don't think it was such an obsession that it was a negative, but maybe it put more undue pressure on. I don't know. And then we got to the Miles first year when we were just surviving. And then, you know, last year, I mean, we were picked 1-2 in the country, although we were picked in the top 10 all year this year. But I think this team has been a little more connected because they've been through more adversity. And anytime you go through adversity, it strengthens you. You know, the adversity we went through last year was maybe outside adversity. The adversity we've went through this year has been our own players getting hurt and inside adversity. So when you look at it that way, they had to make adjustments that they could make this year. And I think this connected part of it has really been good. I think Nick has really seen that this last game that, you know, we talked to Nick a lot the night before the last game, how, you know, everybody's a little more connected. He's got to get into that. And that started maybe, you know, right before he got hurt, we started making some adjustments. And then after he got hurt, we just had to make more adjustments. Everybody had to buy in more. There wasn't a lot of time for, you know, if we made mistakes, we knew we were not going to win games. And maybe that's been a positive, 'cause I could argue whether the 30 games we won last year to 30 games we won this year, I am proud that I looked at the standings last night when I got home, and, you know, I didn't realize, and there were tiebreakers, but the last four teams on the computer that there were, you know, it started Northwestern last, and I think it was Nebraska, maybe Illinois, and somebody else, were the four teams we only played once. And so I think, you know, playing Michigan twice and Purdue twice and Iowa twice, and the only one of those top six that we didn't play twice, I believe, was Maryland. And so I don't think we skated in anyway, you know. We just kind of had to earn our way, and I think you bring up a good point. Maybe that had something to do with it. I don't know. I think we're all looking for reasons. But as I've said many times, it's hard for me to compare the 2 years.
Tom, was that my turn? Tom, you guys are 12-1 in your last 13 games. I know, turnovers aside from the other night, those were a concern, and you've had some concerns after every win. But just how good of...
What are you saying?
I don't know. How well do you think your team is playing at this point in time? I mean, are you playing some of your best basketball at the right time, despite all that you guys, as you mentioned, the adversity you've overcome?
You know, I think there's times during a game we've played some of our best basketball, and that's why you win. And I think we've figured out how to win at the end, and that's why. And then you have a point guard like I have who, you know, winning time makes winning plays. But I don't think we've been as consistent as I would like us to be. And yet, like I said, when we're making substitutions the other night, and I said, put so-and-so in, and he says, can't do that. We'd have four freshmen that haven't played much in the game at the same time, because we tried to look at it as DJ and I do before the game, and what do we want to stay away from? Well, we'd like, if this guy is in there, we'd like to have at least one or two of these guys in there, and if this guy, and a couple times we were stuck. And so I think that leads to inconsistent play, but I think there's times, you know, the start of that game, the stretch that Cassius went. I mean, there's been decent stretches where we played some of our best basketball, and that's what you got to do to win. But consistency overall, and I think you got to add those injuries and those substitutions in there that create some problem. It's not the player's fault. It's just fact of life.
Tom, where is Nick's head right now as he tries to work himself back in there?
Yeah, I think Nick's in a... I thought Friday or Thursday, you know, his head wasn't where it needed to be. And I thought, you know, we spent a lot of time with Nick on Friday. And I thought he's in the best place he's been since he got injured. He was in here working out on his own yesterday because we had the day off. And I just think he just felt better. You know, it's easy to tell a guy he's not in as good a shape or he's not this. But he had a good point to me on Friday. He said, I just didn't feel... And dribbling the ball, comfortable. I just didn't feel comfortable. And I said, well, that's normal. But he's never really been out in his career. He's never had an injury where he was out any time. So when, you know, I try to show him, Michael Jordan didn't just come back. LeBron James didn't just come back. You know, Zion Williamson took a longer period to come back to make sure. The day he was free to go, we played him, you know. And so I think his whole, I think he's in a good spot now. I still think he's got a ways to go. But I think those three guys are really figuring out that we need to get that rotation back. And that's what we're working on a daily basis.
All right, again, just a bit of what Izzo had to say this week as Michigan State, again, has moved on. And we'll be taking on LSU in the Sweet 16 out in Washington, D.C. at Capital One Arena. And right now, you know, I'm seeing various photos and tweets out there from beat reporters who cover the Spartan men's basketball program. Michigan State is practicing as we speak. A few updates from that practice, just some observations. This is coming from Chris Solari of the Detroit Free Press. He has a picture of Kyle Arnes, who is not practicing today for Michigan State. He is not wearing a boot. I don't know. I wonder what that means. He's not practicing, but he's not wearing a boot. That's a good sign. I don't know if we'll
I wouldn't get your hopes up, but in terms of rehab for next year, that's a very good sign.
That's a good thing. Yeah. Don't get your
That's surprising to me that he's not wearing a boot.
He's not wearing a boot. There's a picture of him right now. He's just standing up. You know, he's rocking his kicks. You know, got his warm-up gear on. He's not practicing, but he doesn't have a boot on. He does not have a boot on. Josh Langford does. He's out there, though, dribbling basketball around. So, yeah, we won't. Of course, Josh Langford, his season is over with the surgery and everything. But, yeah, that's an interesting tweet there. Again, that comes from Chris Solari. And also, when it comes to this matchup, which we will be breaking down on tomorrow's Current Sports, one of the key stats that really stands out to me, you know, LSU ranks 43rd nationally in forced turnovers per contest, forcing 15 turnovers per contest. Michigan State ranks 182nd at 13 giveaways a game. Oh, boy. Yeah, Spartans and Tigers tomorrow. Enjoy tonight's games, folks. Happy March Madness. Be easy, people.